I remember the Twin Towers from above, as a pilot would. I have a vivid image in my mind from one night before 9/11. Back then, we could let flight attendants ride on the cockpit jump seat for landing. And that night, a flight attendant joined us in the cockpit as we started the arrival into New York. ATC had told us to call the lady in sight, so when we said we could see the Statue of Liberty, they cleared us for an arrival that took us at low altitude up the Hudson River alongside the city at night. When the two towers came into view on our right, they seemed to rise up out of the city toward us, almost close enough to touch. And then they seemed to float by, gliding past, as all three of us sat silently watching from the cockpit. The symbolic nature of those towers was not lost on any of us. Now, it would be easy to assign more meaning to the towers after the fact, now that everything has changed and been put into perspective. But as we passed the towers that night, no one in the cockpit spoke. And when we did start talking again, it was in hushed tones. And the captain made a comment I'll never forget. He half smiled and shook his head and said, "It gets you right there, doesn't it?" And we all agreed that it was good to be an American. But sometime later, on the morning of September 11, 2001, as I watched in horror as the towers fell, it was not the symbolic nature of the towers that struck me. What I saw as I watched the second airplane head toward the tower, what I saw was the human lives on board that aircraft and in those buildings. And I closely identified with the pilots and crew of those planes. And one thought hit me right then. I knew for certain that the pilots were already dead, because there is no way one of my comrades would sit by while this happened. They would be dead already. Now, in order to understand my way of thinking about this, you have to realize I was trained in the military. I went to the Air Force Academy, and we learned to think of our fellow pilots as comrades, as brothers and sisters in arms. We all knew that at some time or another, we might lose a friend or loved one in combat. We didn't dwell on it, but at least once a year, we would take time out to reflect on the sacrifices made by our fallen comrades. All the cadets would form up, squadron by squadron, on a large open square we called the terrazzo. And we would have what we called a missing man formation. 40 squadrons of uniformed young men and women stood rigidly at attention in neat square blocks spread out across the large open area, and the one cadet in charge of us all would perform a roll call. He would stand in front of this formal gathering and call out the names of those who had once been in our squadrons, but who had now passed away. And while the normal response to roll call was supposed to be, "Present or accounted for, sir," on these days, you would hear a cadet squadron commander call out across the vast terrazzo in a drawn-out, droning response, "Absent, sir." It would echo and fade out before another name was called. And it would go on like that, name after name, with an "Absent, sir," after each one. And then, after the last name was called, we would sing the third verse of the Air Force song. Now, most of you are familiar with the Air Force song, that rousing, patriotic anthem that starts off, "Off we go into the wild blue yonder." But you may not know about the third verse. It's a slow, somber toast to those who have fallen before us, and we would sing it with reverence. We were young men and women, trained to fly and fight, and don't forget it, sir. We were professionals. We were ready to take on the world, and we were tough. But on those days, not one of us escaped without a tear in at least one eye, or without maybe just a little tightness in the throat. One year after 9/11, I went to my 20-year class reunion at the academy, and they had another missing man formation. I joined my classmates up on an overlook above where the cadets stood. We were now men and women, older, wiser, and for some, battle-hardened. We stood there as the young cadets below called out names and answered, "Absent, sir." One of those absent was Leroy Homer, Jr., class of 1987, first officer, United Flight 93. And then we sang the third verse of the Air Force song. I remember I stood behind Bob Rank, who showed up wearing the pressed sharp uniform and shiny eagle insignia designating the rank of full bird colonel. He sang low and weak, like he was choking it out, much like I was. And when the music was over, then came the jets. Four sleek, howling fighter jets came overhead, rattling the windows and deafening the crowd. Just as they came overhead, dead center over the terrazzo, one jet pulled sharply upward and shot straight up, continuing up until it was out of sight. The missing man. As the sound of the fighters died out, a hush fell over us. We began to disperse, and Bob Rank, Colonel Bob Rank, turned to face me. His eyes were brimming with tears. He said to me, "If that doesn't get you right here." And he pointed to his heart, and his voice cracked and trailed off. I will always remember those who died on September 11, 2001, as our missing men and women, and it still gets to me. I'm Joe Dion, and I dedicate this podcast to those men and women